Welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a Pardes student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, who is the Mashgiach Ruchani, spiritual guide at Pardes. He will be teaching us about Parshat Vayishlach. A couple of brief announcements, and then we'll turn it over to Rabbi Schweiger. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it, and now Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayishlach. Yaakov sends out messengers to his brother Esav. And I'd like to focus on the first story in the parsha, which is the attempt by Yaakov to bring about a reconciliation with his brother Esav. Yaakov has just left Lavan. He's coming back to the land of Israel. It's very important to note that Lavan is in the area of Haran. Haran is north of Israel, somewhere in the vicinity of Syria, Turkey perhaps. And Yaakov is now coming from the north, going south. He'll be entering the land of Israel, perhaps in the area of the Golan Heights, perhaps in the area of nowadays what is Metula, Kiryat Shmona, through Lebanon. And yet Yaakov feels the need to send to Esav, who's located in the area of Sde Edom. Edom, nowadays, is the area of Jordan, perhaps Saudi Arabia, the southern part of Israel, below the Dead Sea. So that when you look at a map, it's clear that Yaakov does not have to go through Esav's territory to come into the land of Israel. So that if Yaakov sends to Esav, it's because Yaakov feels that after being away for 20 years, being a fugitive, when Esav was intent on killing him, that he now needs to somehow create a closure, so that he can go on with his life in the land of Israel. When Yaakov sends the messengers, there is a very clear message that he wants to say to Esav, which is that I want to be able to find favor in your eyes. And in fact, when you look at the opening verses, it seems to be that Yaakov tries to somehow minimize what he's accomplished over the past 20 years. He says, Im Lavan Garti, I dwelled with Lavan, and I delayed in coming back. He speaks about having oxen, sheep, camels, goats. But when you look at the way it's described in the singular. By saying that I dwelt with Lavan, that's a way of saying I was biding time. I did not really settle down and strike roots. By speaking in the singular of an ox and a donkey and a sheep and a servant, that's a way of saying, yes, it's true, I have these possessions, but relatively speaking, they're insignificant. And both of those combined are giving the message to Esav, there's no reason for you to be angry with me. There's no reason to feel that I actually cheated you out of something when I stole the blessings. Esav's response to Yaakov is to come out to greet him with a group of 400 men. 400 men seems to be a significant contingent, which could very well have military overtones. We find in chapter 14 of Bereishit, Avraham goes to battle against four superpowers with a band of 318 men. So that it's a little bit unusual for Esav to come out to greet Yaakov with 400 men, unless there is some sort of hostile intent. And it seems to be from the Pasuk that that is certainly the way Yaakov takes it. Because in the following verse, sentence eight, it says that Yaakov is very much afraid. He's distressed. And the word for distress is vayetzer lo, which is related to the word tsar, which means narrow. Yaakov feels that he's very much being narrowed in. He doesn't have too many options. And then we find that Yaakov prepares himself in three ways for this encounter / showdown with Esav. The first way is, as the Midrash says, quoted by Rashi, for warfare. But it's a very interesting military strategy. It's what we would call divide and survive, not divide and conquer. Yaakov says, let me divide my camp so that if Esav should strike one camp, then the other one will survive, will be a remnant. Yaakov has absolutely no offensive strategy. Even in terms of his defensive strategy, it's let me absorb the punch and hopefully minimize the losses. There's a midrash that Rashi quotes that when it says Yaakov is distressed, he's distressed about the possibility that he may have to kill, not only that he will be killed. So that it seems that Yaakov has absolutely no mindset for going to war. The second preparation that he makes is prayer. We find that after he divides his camp, he prays to God. And his prayer basically is, save me, God, from the hand of my brother, that he not come and strike down mother and child. His prayer is a very painful prayer. You get the sense that Yaakov feels that there may be a Holocaust. This may be the extermination of his line. And Yaakov is very concerned. Please, God, have compassion on the children, not so much on him. There's also the feeling, perhaps, that God has been so good to him, has given him so much. He says, katonti, I'm too small. Perhaps I've outused my credit with God. I have no guarantee that maybe this time around God will save me. But his prayer is, please, God, save me from my brother, but from my brother who's Esav, where Esav has a very negative connotation. And then we come to the third part of the preparation. And the third part in rabbinic language is a doron, a present, a gift. But it's a very specific type of gift. It's a mincha. Mincha is the word that comes up later on for an offering to God. In fact, it actually came up, the first time it comes up in Bereishit is when Cain brings a mincha to God from the fruits of the land. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, the leading Orthodox rabbi in Germany in the late 1800s, says that a mincha is a very special type of offering. It's an offering that acknowledges, I am the servant, you are the master. Whatever I have is yours. It's an expression of subservience. Therefore, when Yaakov now gets ready this mincha for Esav, it very much expresses what he says in the very beginning and throughout this section. I am the servant and you are the master. And what a mincha! We're told that he basically has this elaborate gift. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 camels and their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. It isn't just one type of animal, it's a variety of animals. And it's not just the variety, but what we're told is he gathers them together in their separate herds. He makes sure that there are spaces between them. He does this so that he will magnify the gift in the eyes of Esav. And perhaps the coup de grace is that Yaakov tells his people, when each group meets Esav and he asks you, to whom is this? Who's the owner of this present? Who is it being given to? The answer that you give is, it belongs to the servant Jacob, who is giving it to the master Esav. So that Yaakov wants to hammer across the point, I am the servant, you are the master. Yaakov wants to express to Esav, in absolute terms, whatever I have is yours. And perhaps at this stage I'll interject. In certain ways, Yaakov wants to buy off Esav. We find that when Yaakov actually meets Esav, that Yaakov bows down 7 times. And it says he bows down 7 times until he approaches to his brother, which is understood by the rabbis to mean a few steps he bows down, a few steps he bows down. This is clearly a process, a ceremony, that is very much highlighting Yaakov is the servant and Jacob is the master. And Jacob is the servant, Esav is the master. And what is Esav's response to the elaborate gift, to the bowing down? In chapter 33, sentence 4, we're told, and Esav runs towards Yaakov and he hugs him. He falls on his neck, he kisses him, and they both cry. There seems to be this spontaneous outpouring of emotions. Perhaps this sense of brotherly love. And then it says, Esav lifts up his eyes and he sees the wives, the women, and the children. And he asks Yaakov, who are these to you? And Yaakov says, these are the children that God has blessed your servant with. And then Jacob says, and what about this whole camp that I've encountered, the whole elaborate gift? And Jacob says, I sent that to find favor in the eyes of my master. And then we come to sentence 9, which is key. And Esav says, I have much, my brother. Let it be to you that which you have. It seems to be that Esav has come to a point where he's very much reconciled to Yaakov. He's not interested in taking his gift. And he's not interested in taking it because he says, I have enough, I don't need it. But perhaps what's even more significant is that Esav refers to Yaakov, my brother. When we read this sentence, one cannot help but be overcome with tears, perhaps. Two brothers who had a falling out to the point where one was ready to kill the other. And where we can see perhaps the story of Yaakov and Esav as being a replay of the story of Cain and Abel. But this time around, the brother doesn't kill the other brother. Not only that, but this time it seems that he embraces him. He calls him my brother. Here is an historic opportunity for reconciliation between these two very different personalities, a reunification of the family. And it seems that Esav is actually interested in that. And he says to Yaakov, come to my house. Okay, I'd like you to be with me. And then Yaakov begins giving him all kinds of excuses. He says, well, I can't exactly go with you because I have the children, they're delicate, and all the sheep and cattle. I can't really push them too hard. Why don't you go? And I'll catch up with you. But we know in the continuation of the story that it says that on that day, Esav returns on his path to Seir. And in sentence 17, and Yaakov went to Sukkot. And when we look at the end of the story, perhaps in retrospect we can say that Yaakov really had no intention of a real reconciliation with Esav. That Yaakov's intent in the story throughout is perhaps survival. Survival by way of maybe buying Esav off, by pacifying him, by getting him as far away from him as he possibly could, so that, as it says in the end, Esav goes on his path, Yaakov goes on his path, and never should the two paths cross. My sense is that this is a historic tragedy. And I would like to now focus for a few moments on a section in the middle which I skipped. When Yaakov is in the midst of all of his preparations, one can get the feeling how anxious Yaakov is, the fear he has, the sense that this may be the end. And there's a certain point in the middle of the story where it says that Yaakov gets up in the middle of the night, sentence 23, and he takes his wives and his children, and he has them cross a certain passage. When one reads this, it seems so strange, so unusual. How can you possibly travel in the middle of the night in a place which is unknown to you, with little children, with all of your sheep and cattle? And yet the only explanation is that Yaakov is absolutely terrified, so that he's constantly preoccupied with, how can I guarantee the safety of my household? And then we're told in sentence 25, and as Jacob is moving everybody, all of a sudden he's left all alone. And there's a mysterious man who begins wrestling with him until the dawn. Who is this man? And what is the meaning of their wrestling? And perhaps what's even stranger is that Jacob is wounded by this man. And then the man says to Jacob, as the dawn rises, send me away. And Jacob says, no, I refuse to, until you give me a blessing. At which point the man says, what is your name? And he says, Jacob. And then the man says, you're no longer Jacob. You are Israel. What does Israel mean? Israel is the name of the one who wrestles with God and with people and triumphs. One could read Yisrael as being, you are a prince of God, Sar El. What is going on in this story? What is the significance of this blessing, this change of name? There's a rabbinic comment which says, this man is no man. This man, in fact, is an angel. He's the guardian angel of Esav. According to this opinion, this is a man or an angel sent by God. Sent by God as a challenge, as a test of Jacob. A test slash an education. It's a challenge which is now foreshadowing the later encounter between Yaakov and Esav. And what do I mean by that? In last week's Torah portion, and one can see it in this week's Torah portion, Yaakov has a tendency to run away. He has a tendency of always doing things in a convoluted way. And it seems to be that the reason for that is this lack of confidence, the fear that he can't just come straight out and do what he wants. He can't confront people who are evil or ostensibly evil, but he has to somehow find a way of circumventing them, of finding their Achilles heel in bringing about their downfall in a very underhanded way. And on a certain level, we have this problem when Yaakov initially begins with Esav, by us. Because Yaakov sends to Esav and starts saying, I am the servant, you are the master. Does Yaakov really believe that? When Yaakov sends him a gift, is that just a brilliant tactic to be able to buy him off, as I mentioned earlier? Or is it because Yaakov on some level is really making compensation and really acknowledging that Esav deserves the blessing? Perhaps this encounter is trying to show Yaakov, stop running away. Be prepared to stand up for who you are and what you believe in. And it may very well be that when Yaakov is all alone, when he has no support system, when he's pressed against the wall, it's at that moment that Yaakov fights to survive. Not to destroy the other side, to survive. And Yaakov's strength is being able to be wounded and yet nevertheless to be able to hold on until when? When the other side will recognize who he really is, will recognize the idea to acknowledge that he deserves a bracha, to be able to say, you're not Yaakov, you're Yisrael. And perhaps we should recall in last week's parsha, after Yaakov deceived his father, deceived his brother, and received the blessing, Esav walks in, and when all of a sudden he has the sense that Yaakov got the blessing, he says, is that why you called him Yaakov? Because that's exactly the way he behaves, as a sneak, as a cheat, someone who's underhanded. The same Esav who calls him Yaakov should be the Esav who will now call him Israel. But to get that name change, he has to become a different person. And perhaps this leads us to another way of looking at the struggle. That perhaps the struggle is not with the guardian angel of Esav, but with Yaakov himself. Yaakov is struggling with himself because Yaakov has to ask himself, who am I really? What is my identity? And in a way, it's Yaakov who has to show that he has the ability to change his name. He does not have to be a Yaakov. He can be a Yisrael. But it's hard. It's painful. It's a whole different way of looking at himself. In this encounter with the man, he succeeds. He is able to finally get that blessing, to be able to get that changed identity. And therefore, one would have expected in chapter 33, when he then goes on to meet Esav, that this will now be the new Yaakov. And yet, it isn't. It's the old Yaakov. It's the old Yaakov who still speaks in the language of I am the servant, you are the master. It's the old Yaakov who says to Esav, take my blessing. Astoundingly, the Yaakov who, when he confronted the man, said, I won't let you go until you give me a blessing. In sentence 11 of chapter 33, says to Esav, take my blessing, because God has given me much. But that's not what Yaakov should have done. Yaakov should have come to Esav and said to him, acknowledge that the blessing is really mine. I deserve it. I would like to add also, Yaakov should have come to Esav and said to him, I'm sorry for what I did to you. I'm sorry for the method that I used to get the blessing. But at the same time, I want you to acknowledge the blessing really is mine. And perhaps the last thing which Yaakov should have done is that he should have said to him, brother, accept me as your brother. He should not have spoken in the language of servant and master, but in the language of brotherhood. God gave Yaakov an opportunity to become a different individual, to become Yisrael. And by becoming Yisrael, to meet Esav is Yisrael, and to elicit from him acknowledgement that the blessing really is Yaakov's. And perhaps with that, to bring about a historic reconciliation between two brothers. And I might add, perhaps overly optimistically, to have retained Esav within the fold of the Jewish people. But when the actual encounter happens, Yaakov is not able to rise to the occasion. He's not able to be a Yisrael, but he continues to be a Yaakov. And as a result of that, there was a historic opportunity that was lost for generations. When Abraham's name is changed from Avram to Avraham, it's an irreversible change. From that moment on, he is always referred to as Avraham. By Yaakov, yes, his name is changed to Yisrael, but until the time he dies, he constantly goes back and forth between being Yaakov and Yisrael. He is constantly struggling, who am I? And his struggles have far-reaching implications for the Jewish people. Perhaps we also need to ask ourselves, who are we really? Are we Yaakov or Yisrael? I'll conclude by saying it's very interesting that his children, to this very day, are referred to as Bnei Yisrael. And perhaps this is what we need to aspire to be able to live up to what that name really means, to be people who are able to stand up for what we believe, to be able to receive the acknowledgement which is due, to not be intimidated by our surroundings, to be able to be straight and yet firm, and as a result of that, to be able to bring about a reconciliation with everyone around us. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you to Dr. David Bernstein, who is the executive producer of the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.